Coming up on Weekend America.
Are you ready for some frank talk about race?
There's a flutter, a stomach flutter. And then you go, okay, this is a good question. It's a fair question. And then you put it out there.
This weekend, we're speaking our minds about a subject that's never just black and white. I'm Desiree Cooper.
And I'm Bill Radke. Later, we peek in on a typical American couple.
We normally eat dinner together in our room, start to watch a movie, and end up falling asleep, getting ready for the next day.
Yeah, except this couple isn't fighting boredom. They're fighting a war. Love and marriage while stationed in Iraq. And going camping is supposed to be a simple getaway. So why is everything so hard?
I'm most worried about not being able to make the fire, not being able to cook the hot dogs, not being able to put up the tent.
So in other words, you're afraid that we're not going to be able to do anything.
Okay, who forgot the flashlight? Coming up on Week in America after the news.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, welcome to The Weekend. I'm Desiree Cooper in St. Paul.
And I'm Bill Radke in Los Angeles. A Democratic Party Rules Committee is assigning delegates today. We're going to talk about one of the issues lurking under this election. Detroit is pressing Pittsburgh's face into the boards tonight.
Yes!
In the Stanley Cup Finals. But, Des, we all know how resilient penguins are.
Aww.
Famously so. So we'll introduce you to people discovering the true sexiness of a hockey puck. And you, what are you doing this weekend?
I am throwing a surprise going-away party for my roommate. She's moving to Chicago.
I'm a guest judge at a country duet competition.
My wife wants to go on a bicycle ride. We usually bicycle down to Walden Pond.
This weekend, I'm hanging out with my friend Robin. I met her in South America.
This weekend, I'm pulling the motor out of a Mercedes-Benz diesel and affixing it to a raft that I've made out of scrap materials and putting a propeller on the drive shaft and calling it a boat.
You know, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Don't do it. Just don't do it. We don't want to be reading
about you in
the paper.
Good luck, MacGyver. Those voices came from Cambridge, Cincinnati, and San Francisco.
Well, today, Democrats decide what to do about Florida and Michigan. Both states were stripped of their delegates when they violated party rules, and they decided to move their primaries up. Well, the party's decision could move Barack Obama closer to the Democratic presidential nomination, and that's bound to push voters closer to their true feelings about race. Dawn Turner Trice is a columnist with the Chicago Tribune, and for a month she's been hosting an online forum about race. She said she was inspired to start it after Obama gave a speech in March.
This is where we are right now. It's a racial stalemate we've been stuck in for years. And contrary to the claims of some of my critics, black and white, I have never been so naive as to believe that we can get beyond our racial divisions in a single election cycle. Or with a single candidate.
One of my favorite commentaries on that speech came from Jon Stewart on The Daily Show.
And so, at 11 o'clock a.m. on a Tuesday, a prominent politician spoke to Americans about race as though they were adults.
I remember that clip, too. And in a way, that's just what Dawn is trying to do. On her website, there are reader essays, there's tests about racial perceptions, and there's a section for any question about race that you've been afraid to ask or had no idea how to ask.
When we started doing this, I decided to divide these up into categories based on just a tremendous amount of email messages that I got. And among the questions were people asking things like, is it okay if I see a black woman with elaborate braids? May I compliment her? And I thought, well, that's really interesting because if we are tripping over the somewhat smaller things, it's almost impossible to broach the bigger racial questions. So I thought it would be nice to have a segment or a section where we just ask basic etiquette questions. Like a lot of Hispanic Americans and Asian Americans have said that when they're asked, where are you from? The real question is, well, where are you from? You aren't American.
Or I can tell you're different. I really can't pin you down.
Right, exactly. And so it's these little questions where, I mean, it's coded language that we have sometimes. And the people who are being asked the questions, I mean, they're so familiar with those questions that they know what's really being asked. And so we're staying on the surface as opposed to really getting to the meat of what people really want to know. And so I was hoping to design a forum where we could do that. We can get below the surface.
What has surprised you most about the conversation you're having about race on the website?
Yeah, I mean, there are people who, and it's astounding to me, there are people who will come to the website and say, well, why are you talking about race? And it's always, it's interesting that there's almost this, if we don't talk about it, if we ignore it, then it doesn't exist. And I'm blown away constantly by that mindset.
Why do some African Americans choose to speak so poorly, mispronouncing words like ask? I feel it holds them back and presents a poor image of themselves.
Do some Asians find it rude if a person doesn't remove his or her shoes before entering their homes? What should you do if you aren't sure whether to remove your shoes? And what should you do if you don't want to remove your shoes?
Do you have any racists in your family? And if so, what do you say to them if they're saying something you think is racist?
What do Caucasians fear most about African Americans?
My question could be directed at any minority group, but I'm aiming this one particularly at African Americans. I wonder if, as American citizens surrounded by white people and white culture, if you constantly are made aware of your skin color or black culture.
One of the things we do is we have people ask questions, and then we have readers answer them. And one of the questions was from a 71-year-old African-American man. He said, my question to white America is this. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being absolute equal, how do you rate African-Americans on character and intelligence? And a lot of people hated that question. And I think that what people were trying to get to is that it's nice to say in polite company that, yeah, we're equals. But on a real, you know, a reality basis, when you see the person moving in next door who happens to be African-American, what is your honest opinion? We had a question the other day about Obama and safety coming off the Hillary Clinton assassination controversy.
Right. The question is, do you worry about Obama's safety? Safety along the campaign trail. And I have to say, when I saw that, I'm like, oh, no.
Right.
What kind of response did you get?
Oh, the response has been overwhelming. There are a lot of people who are saying that they're praying for Obama. There are people who are mad at me for even posing the question. There's almost a whisper. It's a little bit taboo. You don't talk about something like this. Even in forming the question, you know, your heart kind of goes, kind of flutters a little bit.
You mean, editorially speaking, there was some hesitation about posing that question?
It's not necessarily from the editorial perspective, but it's from that personal where you kind of see the words.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a bit of, in the year 2008, sometimes it is extremely difficult to hear, you know, the way people feel about black people, the way people feel about white people. We had a woman who did an essay on the drama between blacks and Jews.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the comments there were extremely hurtful. I thought her essay was extremely brave, but a lot of people kind of missed that.
What was the gist of her essay?
Her essay was how she, as a Jewish woman, she considered herself to be fairly evolved in terms of race relations. She had worked during the civil rights movement. But as her kids started to get older, she realized that she had some question about them dating black kids. And man, people at times kind of slapped her down. I mean, black people were mean. some Jews were mean. And it was just, I was so protective of her. And I mean, you know, the point is to post those comments.
Well, so what was the point? What did you learn from that?
For me, it says we need to put this out there. I mean, it's not all kisses and hugs, but we need to get these sentiments out there so that people can see. I mean, they're not, you know, we're a work in progress, and we just have to keep working. If you're willing to work, you don't arrive at some racial destination where everything is harmonious, even in your head.
I've written a column for a decade in a major market in Detroit, the Detroit Free Press. And I can't tell you the times I've been writing about snowflakes, about, you know, some newfangled product that came out. And the amount of vitriol that I get in the comments that have nothing to do, I'm not writing about race. It has nothing to do with race. And it even couldn't even be, you know, mildly construed as about race. And yet people see my picture there, or they happen to know I'm African American woman. And immediately the comments are just I mean, they are just really, really vitriolic, really, yes. really mm-hmm. angry and directed at me as it in terms of my race.
Right.
How much of that are you getting and how much do you have to weed out in order to keep the discourse on a level that's constructive?
With this forum, I decided very early on that I wanted it to be open and honest because there's no way that you can have a discussion about race and have a fair discussion in which you try to really get to something without it being open and honest, because there have been so many years where we've been talking amongst ourselves in our very homogenous groups and we haven't we've been more honest there, but we haven't kind of crossed over in many cases. And I have not, I mean, in all honesty, I've seen there have been some comments that have been fairly strident and biting, but nothing that's been so nasty that I wouldn't post it.
Is the state of race relations in America, if the forum is any indication, is it more dire or less dire than you thought?
If I step back, I would say less dire, because again, I think that sometimes you tend to focus on too much on the negatives. But if I were to just step back and really look at the positives, the people I've met and the people who have been willing to share their experiences, and again, I mean, just and these aren't all rosy experiences. These are people who are trying and that they are participating. The fact that they are participating says a whole lot, and so I would have to say definitely less dire. But I'm an optimist, Des.
Well, I hope your assessment is correct. Don, thank you for sharing your time with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Don Turner Trice is a columnist at the Chicago Tribune. She's been hosting a website about race for the past month.
You know, Des, I got the sense listening to that your experience with your readers wasn't so constructive. How convinced are you that this open forum on race is really helpful?
Yeah, one thing Don says is that by being anonymous, people can really step out there and say what's on their mind. Now, my experience is when people are anonymous, they tend to sink to the lowest common denominator. Like, there's no check on what they're saying, and they can just do this screed. And so what happens is I felt like people were just being, you know, overly antagonistic about race. And it was very disheartening for me. But I'm glad that she's finding it a more productive conversation.
Well, we've been asked to have this conversation before, right? After the OJ verdict and after the Hurricane Katrina debacle.
Yeah, you know, but one thing that Don pointed out is both of those situations are really negative times in history. And with the Obama campaign, it's raising the issue of race in the context of positiveness. In other words, there's no one to blame. We're not sitting here finding out what went wrong because a black man is running for president. And so it's a unique opportunity for us to talk about race.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the Chicago Tribune has divided its site into four main areas. It's stuff about etiquette, eyewitness accounts, and you can even test yourself about race. If you want to participate, go to our website, weekendamerica.org.
Weekend America is brought to you in part by Target, giving 5% of its income to the community since 1946. That now adds up to over $3 million every week. And by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Tables, How to Eat Supper, the latest cookbook inspired by the radio program for people who love to eat.
If you were in danger, would you want your partner close by or as far away as possible? Married Couples at War, coming up next on Weekend America. You're listening to Weekend America from American Public Media. I'm Bill Radke with Desiree Cooper. This weekend, Sergeants Bekisa and Joe Cole are working. Their jobs are at Camp Falcon in Iraq, also known as the FOB. It's where they're stationed together. Bekisa and Joe have been married for 3 years. Married couples cohabiting on base is pretty new for our military. The Army used to bar soldiers of the opposite sex from sleeping in the same area, but Army commanders recently decided to let married couples live together. I asked Joe and Bekisa what their living quarters are like, and they said, sort of like a trailer, except maybe smaller.
What it came with was two wall lockers, two tiny nightstands with one drawer on it, two beds that you can set up as bunk beds or bring them down, and a window and a door, that's it.
A love nest.
Yeah.
And the beds, like, we just took them down and put them side by side to kind of make it like a little king or queen size bed. So we just got them stacked beside each other and turned the mattress sideways so we can have a lot more room and we can sleep together. But it's small.
And what's it like to be married there? How romantic can you be in a war zone?
Not at all. I mean, I really can't show her anything while I'm at work because we're supposed to keep professional. And so we maintain that during the 12-hour shifts that we work.
You find some interesting ways to be romantic. Just little games that we play or little smart remarks we make to each other is pretty much how we be romantic.
Can you let us in on any of that?
Some of the things I do, you know, when she's walking around getting ready for bed, I call her my little stinky pie, like, you stink.
Well, see, because you sweat a lot over here because the temperature can get anywhere from the 90s up to 108, even higher. So it's kind of funny to us because everybody around here sweats, you know.
And everybody isn't as close to one another as you are.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right.
So while you're on duty, how do you have to keep it professional? What's that like?
Like when I see her, sometimes I want to go up and hug her and hold her hand or kiss on her or whatever. And that stuff you can't do while, you know, we're on duty. So what I try to do is she have her own office and sometimes she in there by herself and I sneak in there, you know, pat her on the butt or give her a quick hug or, you know, little stuff like that just to let her know I still love her.
We can't be all real, real close to each other because of the perception, even though we are married. But we still have to be professional because we're in uniform and we are in a combat zone. So got to be on our P's and Q's out here.
Call each other Sergeant?
Yes.
Yes.
If somebody's around, I'll call her Sergeant Cole. But if it's just me and her, when I speak back to her officer, I call her Kiki.
You know, for me and my wife, our weekend is when we get to relax together. What is your version of a weekend?
Going to chow at 1300 because right now she worked 7 days a week, 12 hours a day. I get off Wednesdays. There's no real time off for us, but when we get off a shift, and like I said, when we get off shift, we normally eat dinner together in our room, start to watch a movie and end up falling asleep, mm-hmm. getting ready for the next day.
What does that do to you as a couple, not having much of that time together?
I think it's actually bringing us closer because we are in a combat zone. So I actually think that it's bringing us closer and it's showing a lot more. We're showing a lot more affection towards each other and it's making that love grow stronger because it's a difficult situation that we're in right now. So if we can make it through this, I believe we can make it through anything.
I second that emotion. Like she said, it is bringing us close because, like she said, it is real hard. And that gets kind of stressful on me, but like I said, if we can make it through this, then we'll be able to conquer anything.
I talk to military spouses who worry a lot about their loved one overseas. You guys are there together. How much do you worry about each other there?
But only time I really worry. Go ahead.
It's a whole lot easier for me being over here with him rather than being in the States and not seeing him at all, talking to him about once a week. And not knowing what's going on, you know?
Well, if I had my choice, she would be back in the States and let me come do this because, you know, this is my third trip over here. So, you know, I know what to expect. And, you know, like when we first got here, there was multiple attacks on our FOB. And, you know, every time she hear a round go off or anything like that, a motor around or anything, she would jump and get scared and go get her gear and get a weapon and get ready to you know, defend the fob. And I'll be like, well, you know, it's just mortars. I mean, if you hear the mortar, I had to tell her, if you hear the mortar, you're fine. It's when you don't hear the mortar is when you have problems. It's either too far away, the reason you didn't hear it, or it hit you. And if it hit you, then, you know, it's not too much you can do. I mean, so if I had my way, yeah, I would rather her be home because I can't leave my post to go check on her. So
your deployment ends in about a year. If you were to get reassigned to Iraq, would you sign up to be together there again?
Yes, I would.
Boy, that question hurt me. I mean, I was hoping this would be my last year because I have 15 years in. So once I come back, I'll be a little bit over three, and I was trying to avoid a fourth time over here. But if I had to come back, no, I wouldn't want her to come. And hopefully that one would be my last one.
So every time you say goodbye to one another, you go off to your separate parts of the camp. What is that goodbye like?
I don't even say goodbye to him. We have this thing where we don't say goodbye. We say, I'll talk to you later, or I'll see you later.
When we first started dating, we used to say goodbye, and we came to the conclusion that goodbye means, like, forever. For everything, we're gone. We're not ever coming back. So we established that we would not use the word goodbye unless we're gone for good. So now, like she said, we say, see you later, or I'll talk to you later. So I really don't even think about it. Once we part from each other, I know she's going to be all right. Like I said, my biggest worry is when the incoming rounds start coming in, and I just don't know. I don't know if she's all right or not.
I think that's one of the biggest things, not knowing, is the biggest stress factor over here. It's just not knowing what's going to happen next.
But you can't dwell on not knowing because it will stress you out, and you won't be able to do your job.
Exactly.
At least you don't know together.
Right.
Right.
Bikisa and Joe, thank you so much for spending this time with us.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you guys for supporting us and letting us do this.
Sergeant Bikisa Cole and her husband Joe talking to us from their forward operating base. Army commanders have started allowing couples to live together in Iraq.
You know, just listening to them, Bill, Joe and Bikisa make it sound like a no-brainer. I'm just wondering why the Army's just starting to let couples stay together.
Well, this Iraq war is unique because there are more married couples serving together than ever before. Mm. And the fighting has dragged on for so long that it is putting a strain on couples. And that makes it harder to keep soldiers and recruit soldiers. But one other reason this hasn't happened earlier is that some people think it's bad for a unit's cohesion. The question is, if there's an attack, will a married couple stay focused on the mission or will they get caught up in trying to make sure their spouse is okay?
Oh, that's no small consideration. Maybe that's why Joe said he prefers that they not serve together in the future.
Right. Maybe you'd rather not find out the answer to that question. You're listening to Weekend America.
Weekend America is made possible by grants from CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from public radio stations including WBUR Boston, WCPN Cleveland, KPCC Los Angeles, and KUOW Seattle, and is made possible in part by the University of Washington Executive MBA Program.
A man, a tent, and his terror. Confessions of an unhappy camper coming up on Weekend America.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Bill Radke with Desiree Cooper.
It's time for your letters. Last week, during our call out for three-day weekend stories, we made a reference to Veterans Day. David Vieira, president of the Citywide Friends of the Boston Public Library, wrote in to correct us.
Veterans Day is not a three-day weekend. It was specifically exempted from the Monday holiday law and is always celebrated on November 11th. It becomes a three-day weekend only when it falls on a Saturday, Sunday, or a Monday.
Well, we salute you for that correction, David.
Recently, in our Good, Bad, No News segment, we talked about public reaction to the death of a horse at the Kentucky Derby. Some of our guests said that danger is a natural part of sports. Look at auto racing and football. Well, many of you wrote in to make the point that human athletes choose to compete while horses don't get much of a say in the matter. Thank you. So noted.
Good point. Also, 2 weeks ago, we brought you Mark Sanchez's story about his journey as a bone marrow donor. And many of you were moved by this story, including Joel Carter of Grand Rapids, Michigan, who wrote Mark this letter.
Dear Mr. Sanchez, I listened to your story with deep fascination as to the process you went through when invited to save a life, the life of a person you do not know and may never meet. I am a recipient of a bone marrow transplant, but I often wonder what the experience has meant to my donor. I would like to tell you my story so that perhaps you might receive a glimpse of what it's like for a transplant recipient to be given a second life. In February 2007, I was diagnosed with acute myelogenous leukemia, a very aggressive, deadly form of leukemia, especially for my age group. When I shared the diagnosis with my family, everyone braced themselves. Throughout the journey of my battle with cancer, I've faced very bad odds of survival at every stage of treatment. I received chemotherapy for 4 months and was in remission when in June the leukemia returned. My only medical option was a bone marrow transplant, which I received in August. Since then, by the hand of God and the use of modern treatments, my recovery has been a textbook example of success. My match was found through the National Marrow Donor Program. At the time the search was conducted, there were about 6 million registrants domestically and another 4 million internationally. Two acceptable matches were found. One said yes. One person in 10 million was in a position to save my life, and she said yes. I often think of my donor, someone like you who did not know me and maybe never will. All I know of her is that she was 35 years old and does not reside in the USA. I've already written two anonymous letters as allowed by program protocol, but I've received no response. I assume that a donor would want to know what happened and would want to know something about the person to whom they gave life. I never considered your perspective that it might be too painful because her gift may be associated with another personal loss. Let me try to put into tangible terms what her gift means. I have a son who I adopted when he was 4 years old. I have no natural children of my own. Early in my marriage, my wife and I lost 6 children at various stages of pregnancy. I always wanted to be a part of a child's life from their first day, and I look forward to grandchildren. But when my diagnosis came with such gloomy odds of survival, it looked like I would never see that day. But thanks to a successful transplant, I have survived. The day I so dearly hoped for came April 5th when my grandson Emerson was born. I was able to meet him face to face because both of us were an example of miraculous God-given life. His new, mine renewed with the gift from my donor. My father did not have to bury his son. My son did not lose his father in the prime of life, and Emerson will know his grandfather through personal relationship, not just by photos and anecdotal stories. All of my family members, every friendship I have, all my coworkers, and everyone I interact with is affected because I continue to live. It's not about just one guy who beat cancer and continues on with his own personal life. That life, whether glorious or pathetic, is intrinsically a part of many other lives. If you would allow me to be the voice of your recipient for a moment, I would like to say what I believe is in his heart and soul, as well as the hearts and souls of those who know and love him. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Thank you for giving me life. And may God bless you richly.
That was Joel Carter writing from Grand Rapids, Michigan. We love hearing from you, so share your reactions with us, corrections or comments. Just go to weekendamerica.org.
We'll be right back.
Weekend America's founding sponsor is Target.
From American Public Media, welcome to The Weekend. I'm Bill Radke with Desiree Cooper, and this summer, we're going on vacation. From weekend getaways to road trips across the country to vacations abroad, Weekend America is airing your stories.
Well, we start this week with that summer staple, the camping trip. Jonathan Goldstein was raised to think of the natural world as something that must be avoided. For him, woods meant trouble. Meanwhile, his daughter Arizona has a healthy love of the wild. So when she asked her dad to take her camping, that two-word Boy Scout motto became Jonathan's call to arms: be prepared.
Okay, let's go through some of the things that you have here.
We have the flashlight. I have two books. We have a hammer to set up the tent. I have my overnight bag, like my toothbrush and all that. I have a pair of tights in case...
What you're hearing is not the sound of a man and his daughter stalking a fallout shelter.
My fluffy socks and a camera.
Arizona and I are merely going camping.
I don't know that there's enough room.
Oh, there'll be enough.
Arizona is my 11-year-old.
Don't worry.
And we're in the midst of preparing for a night in the wilderness. Or at least a campsite adjacent to the wilderness.
We have one Tropicana oranges with calcium.
That's right, one single night.
We have Nutella.
I was raised with a high regard for preparedness. Just in case is how my family and I punctuate a great many of our sentences. Preparedness is a value that I try to pass on to Arizona.
Hey, Arizona, did you put the knife in there for the bagels? Cream cheese in there?
On the other hand, a value that I will have a harder time passing on to Arizona...
It would be cool if we saw a wolf, but...
...is a love of nature.
I could live without seeing a wolf.
Nature was always just something for other people, other families. Growing up, we didn't even have real plants in the house, always favoring the plastic kind. Watering, picking up dead leaves, strictly for suckers. But Arizona's a different story.
The crow's my favorite animal.
She loves the outdoors. She gets nature.
Rabbits are cute.
And lately, she's been wanting to go camping.
Oh, we should bring some campfire songs.
So being the nice guy that I am, I agreed to take her.
Let me just take a look at the instructions.
But it wasn't going to be like some personal essay in Field & Stream magazine.
And away we go. We're off. What are you most nervous about with the trip?
Is that the fire's not going to light? What are you most worried about?
Yeah, I'm most worried about not being able to make the fire, not being able to cook the hot dogs, not being able to put up the tent. And
so, in other words, you're afraid that we're not going to be able to do anything. Is that it?
Pretty much. I was a basket case.
How many times have you gone camping before?
Twice.
When I was a kid, I was instructed to never pick up anything I found on the ground. Coins, bus tickets, nothing. Because in the words of my mother, someone could have peed on it.
Is that an entrance or something?
While Arizona was imagining trees and wildlife, all I was imagining was one big urinal.
All right, here we are, pulling into Oka Park Campground.
Yep.
Boy, we're right in the thick of it, eh?
Yeah.
It's beautiful. All the trees.
What number are we?
Wildlife, nature, shrubs, greenery, leaves.
To all the world, I was a dad taking his daughter on a routine camping trip.
Home sweet home.
We are here, folks.
Oh, look, we got a picnic bench.
Let's just not take anything else out until we have our tent ready, okay?
Arizona sounded like she really knew what she was talking about.
Don't put that here.
And since it's in my nature to respect authority...
Put them up like that?
I found myself letting her take charge of the operation.
So tent first? That's what you're saying?
Tent first.
All right, okay, fine.
Although I couldn't help but offer some suggestions.
Take some thought where you want to put it.
Right here.
Oh, no, not on the dirt. Listen to what I just said. Oh, man. Okay, step one, unpack the tent bag and separate the contents. Assemble the shock corded frame.
Keep going. Hey, wait, calm down. Okay, wait, keep going.
Oh, I'm lost.
Keep going. It's going to have to turn at one point.
Who are you? Is this step four?
I have no idea, but it's one of the steps.
You know, I never got to do any of this kind of stuff with my dad.
I've been carrying around with me all day a palpable terror that because of my own incompetence, Arizona and I could end up sleeping under a picnic table,
balled up like hedgehogs.
I just like breaking up some twigs now.
Do we need something to like poke around with?
I set the newspaper on fire and I've put a match right on top of the pine needles.
I know this sounds crazy.
Careful, careful.
But I just felt so relieved on such a primordial level that we had a fire.
It's amazing we might end up eating hot dogs for dinner.
That my kid was being fed. That we had shelter for the evening. I actually felt high.
That is really good.
Man, this is well earned, huh? Isn't this the life?
There's nothing like a meal
that you made yourself in the outdoors, huh?
We've accomplished all of our goals.
Tent, fire, hot dogs.
Our fire's out.
Okay, maybe I was getting a little cocky. But it was time to get some shut-eye anyhow. And having the fire go out saved me the job of having to pour out our bottled water supply to extinguish it. This was something I was starting to learn in the wild. You had to roll with things. That's how the animal kingdom did it. A beaver comes home to find his dam destroyed. Time to get some shut-eye. A falcon comes home and finds his nest has been robbed of its eggs. Time to get some shut-eye.
I think you're supposed to take your shoes off before you go in.
What? Why?
Just not to track mud in and stuff like that.
There's already dirt in it, so I don't know.
No, there's no dirt in it.
Yeah, well, what's that?
I knew this for a fact because I'd plucked up every little twig and each bit of dirt from inside the tent like a human dustbuster.
Oh, this is the life. This is the only life for me. It's the only life I've ever really known.
You could never go 6 days without, 7 days without watching TV.
Do you think that's what would be hardest for me, sleeping in a tent for 7 days, would just be the lack of TV? You think if they threw a TV into the sleeping bag, then I'd be fine? It's untied.
No. Oh, this is really soft toilet paper.
It's a little touch of civilization, huh? Makes you lonesome for home? How many days do you think you could stay out here?
I don't know.
I could probably stay out here, you know, for another day and a half or so.
Do you think if you've been in the outdoors your whole life, you could find your own food?
You mean without, like, going to the grocery store?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. You think?
Uh-uh.
Go through people's trash?
Well, I feel like Indians. If you went back in the past, you'd think you could do it.
Oh. What do you think?
No.
We were talking, exchanging ideas. Well, at least we were getting a chance to just hang out, doing something real together.
In case I fall asleep, all right? You're in charge, okay?
Living instead of just watching people living on TV. Okay, and that's what I was enjoying the most.
Okay, but if you fall asleep, I wake you up.
Okay, but good night.
For me, the pleasure of going camping has been equal parts what's in the woods, alongside of what isn't. The ringing phones, the sound of traffic, the obligation of constant emails. And once you get rid of all that stuff, what you're left with is just being, spending time. And I love spending time with Arizona.
Wow, it is so dark. Okay, let's step outside. We gotta take a look at the sky. Come on.
There won't be that many stars out. They come out around like 11 or 10.
Is that true? I thought they come out like when it's dark, and it's so dark. Man, I'm going to want to come back here. I like it here. You?
Maybe next time with veggie dogs instead of the regular kind. We would have to do it again. I meant it. At least until the next morning, as we were packing up the tent.
The side long leg's lost. It's his front small leg, his back big leg.
What, do you think he's missing a leg?
He only has 6 legs.
Okay, but don't. I think he could bite you, though.
He won't bite me. It's a daddy long legs.
Okay, but don't they bite?
No.
You really care about the wild, eh? You're a friend to man and beast alike, right down to the last daddy long legs.
Move. I gotta pick it up.
Jonathan Goldstein and his daughter, Arizona. This piece is part of the public radio series called Stories from the Heart of the Land. It's produced by Jay Allison and Emily Botine, and there's a link to the whole series on our website at weekendamerica.org.
You know what I dug there as a father?
What's
was
that?
The mutual respect going on there.
instead of practicing his tent assembly at home over and over like I would have done, he was happy to let her be in charge of that, and she didn't mind that apparently that he's helpless, and it was just a very nice mutual acceptance.
Yeah, she definitely was in the catbird seat there, kind of driving that whole experience, and that was pretty cool for him to step back. But, you know, I love the part where they were like the crackling fire and they're eating their hot dogs and there's this contentment. And for me, whenever me and my family went camping, cooking was always my favorite part, because at home cooking was somehow my job, like magically. But when I went camping, food is like, that's all you do. So it's everyone is pitching in, and it's not just the job of one person.
And oh, how the quality suffers.
It doesn't matter because it's the only food you've got. You just got to eat it. But, you know, one thing I've noticed is when we go camping, often we were the only African-American family there. And I just saw an industry survey that said that out of the 30 million people, Americans who've gone camping, only about 300,000 are African-American. So the National Park Service is starting programs to try to attract more minorities to come to the campgrounds and the parks. I'm thinking that might be an easy sell this summer because with gas prices and everything, people are looking for low-cost vacations. You're listening to Weekend America.
Well, that was Arizona camping. If you're camping in Arizona, enjoy a dry 95 degrees today. Here's more on weekend weather with Brendan Noonan.
This weekend, New York City will do an about-face from last week's Fleet Week and host the World Science Festival, a four-day celebration of science featuring a dozen Nobel laureates and Alan Alda, who, although not a scientist himself, did play an army surgeon on TV and build a gin distillery in his tent. The forecast calls for scattered thunderstorms and temperatures in the 70s, but they probably already knew that. Headphones aren't so much speakers as they are aural straws, slurping up music from your iPod juice box. This weekend, pull out those straws and listen to live roots music at the Thirsty Ear Festival Women's Celebration in Santa Fe, New Mexico. It's going to be sunny and in the 80s. Remember, if your ears are driving, please listen responsibly. If you're a pet, then it's probably hard to conceive of a time when you weren't part of mainstream culture, and events like Petpalooza in Auburn, Washington, were the only places you could go to celebrate your own kind. In fact, if you're a pet, and you understand me right now, you're probably not a pet at all, and you're definitely not part of mainstream culture. It's going to be partly cloudy and in the high 60s. Remember, no goldfish in the mosh pit. For more information on these and other events, go to weekinamerica.org. With a little bit of weather everywhere, I'm Brendan Noonan for Weekend America.
If you're not into the Stanley Cup, try thinking of hockey as romantic. Two hearts slam into each other next on Weekend America.
Weekend America is supported by Gather.com, where people can stay in touch with who they know and what they love. You can discover unsigned musicians, discuss books, share pictures, and keep up with the world. People are talking. Gather.com. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert. Mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Online at Calvert.com.
From American Public Media, this is Weekend America. I'm Desiree Cooper with Bill Radke. Tonight is game 4 of the Stanley Cup Finals between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Detroit Red Wings. And I'm happy to report my Red Wings lead the series 2-1.
I never hear you talk about hockey. Are you really a big fan?
Only when they're in the finals. Look, I've seen them throw octopus on the ice one time or two.
Yes. Just like the game's founders did in Iceland. Now, in Los Angeles here, it's a little harder for hockey to catch on because nothing is frozen here. So the local NHL hockey team is doing something smart. The Los Angeles Kings are offering hockey classes to the public. And this is the really smart thing they're doing. The LA Kings might be all men, but the classes are co-ed. Brilliant combined sex and skates. Weekend America's Charlie Schroeder's heart is bursting with this tale of love on the ice.
When Benjamin Salisbury was a kid, the closest he got to playing hockey was when he landed a role in the Disney movie, D3, Mighty Ducks. But instead of being cast as a player, he was relegated to the sidelines, where he played the radio announcer, Josh.
Conway gets the rebound, and ices the puck. I don't know how much longer these ducks can hang on.
It's not that Benjamin didn't want to play hockey when he was a kid. After all, he knew how to skate. It's just that his mom wouldn't let him.
I think my mom's real hatred for the game was that she was convinced that if we ever played hockey, we would lose our teeth. And as she painstakingly reminds me, she spent $6,000 on my braces.
She just loved her son and his teeth too much to let him play. Benjamin grew up in Minnesota, where kids learn how to play hockey while they're still in their diapers. So he was kind of an anomaly. Benjamin eventually moved 2,000 miles away from his mom to Los Angeles. That's where he fell in love with the Los Angeles Kings hockey team and with Kelly, the woman who's now his wife. Earlier this year, while at a Kings game, Benjamin heard about a beginner's workshop that the team was holding. They offered 5 classes, equipment, and tickets to games. But the best of all, you didn't need any experience. He thought, unlike his mom, what a great thing to share with a person you love.
I was really nervous because I wanted to do it with Kelly, sort of so we had kind of something to do together.
But there was just one problem.
I've never skated before.
Next line, next line. Guys, coming off on that far bend.
At their first class, Benjamin finally got to hold a hockey stick, and Kelly got to skate. Well, kind of.
I fell a lot in the first lesson.
Not intentionally,
no. Not intentionally at all.
Afterwards, the couple went to a rink near their house so Benjamin could teach Kelly how to skate.
And it was kind of really the first real test of our relationship.
Because you never really know someone until you try to teach them something dangerous.
There was definitely a couple times where I was like, why aren't you just skating? And she's like, I am, leave me alone.
Well, he kept telling me, oh, just push off your skates. What do you mean, push off my skates? I had no idea what he was talking about.
Love on the ice has many pitfalls. Teaching your loved one how to skate, for example. And locker room protocol.
I am the only woman in the dressing room, and I'm proud of it.
Even though women make up about 40% of the class, Kelly's the only one who suits up with the guys, something she's done since the first night when she mistakenly followed Benjamin into the men's locker room.
We honestly didn't know. Like, we got out to the, like, she dressed, and then we got out to the ice, and I was like, I can't believe there's no other women. And I thought there'd be at least a few women in this. And then we look out, and there comes, like, 10 women. I was like, oh, there's probably a separate dressing room.
All the sweaty, half-naked men don't faze Kelly or make Benjamin jealous. Besides, they have other things to worry about, like all the stuff they have to wear. Pads, gloves, shin guards, and a big helmet. All told, it takes them about a half hour to suit up. And by the time they're dressed, it's hard to tell the two apart. They look like they're heading into battle. Because they wear gloves, they can't hold hands. They can't kiss because there's a big face guard on their helmets.
The first day just literally felt like you were like a knight at medieval times in Anaheim or something. You're literally just like weighed down.
For the first 20 minutes or so, their class does some drills. They skate backwards, forwards, and handle the puck. The last 40 minutes is a scrimmage, 5-on-5. The pace is slow, the play is sloppy. It's what you'd expect from a bunch of beginners, and it's generally harmless. At their level, the biggest danger often comes from themselves. Last week when Kelly fell, she hurt her tailbone because she didn't put her padding on correctly.
When Kelly fell last game, it's like what I imagined watching like one of your children get hurt, like just have every impulse like go over to her. And you're trying to maintain some sort of, like, butch hockey-like image, but it's kind of hard when you're, like, down on one knee going, you all right, baby, you all right?
Unlike the pros, checking, the practice of slamming into an opponent, isn't technically allowed in this workshop. That is, unless you consider checking, losing control, and plowing into someone, which is what I saw the night I was there. And with rock-hard hockey pucks flying all over the place, there's always the chance of getting hurt, as Kelly tells me after class.
Well, this one guy, I don't know what he was thinking, but he went for the puck and I was going for it at the same time, and he did this slap shot right towards me, and I flinched thinking it was going to hit me in the face. And Benjamin offered to, you know, make things happen if it actually did hit me.
Of course, as Benjamin's skills improve, his attitude might change.
I don't know. I got to be honest with you. Today, she was kind of skating out in front of me, and I was like, it might be kind of fun just to kind of roll over her right now. But I didn't. No, I think it's hard to tell. It's like, okay, would my competitive nature kick in, or would my desire to make sure that she's safe kick in?
Then again, Kelly's attitude might change as well.
If I was more confident on skates and knew I could stand up if I knocked into him, I'd totally check him. I mean, no, I wouldn't. I love you. It'd be fun. I wouldn't do it violently. It would be very playful.
Yeah, right.
Just don't knock his teeth out. I'm Charlie Schroeder for Weekend America.
Benjamin's mom, by the way, still doesn't know that he's playing hockey. Unless she listens to this program, in which she now does. Penguins and Red Wings play tonight. We've got video of the Salisburys making their way around the ice at weekendamerica.org. And that's another hour of American Public Media's Weekend America. Glad to have you with us. I'm Bill Radke.
And I'm Desiree Cooper. You can download a free podcast of our entire program at weekendamerica.org. Go Red Wings!
America is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act. This program is made possible with support from AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio, and public radio stations including WMFE Orlando, KUOW Seattle, and KNOW St. Paul, and made possible by grants from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Weekend America is produced and distributed by American Public Media.
Hi, this is Bill Radke, host of Weekend America. The weekend is when you have time to explore your own story.
I felt ashamed to have a history book that only had a couple of pictures of African Americans who were slaves. They looked poor, they looked downtrodden, they looked miserable.
Your weekend, your story. Join us for the next Weekend America.